Roger Williams University is hosting a crisis management seminar on May 3rd at their Providence campus. Crises, whether a natural disaster, cyber attack, or financial instability, can have severe repercussions if not handled properly. This is where crisis management plays a pivotal role. Join Roger Williams MBA students and expert speakers to learn how to prepare for the unexpected. The program is totally free and open to the public. You can register online at rwu.edu/events/crisis-management-symposium.
This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
All right, Bartholomew Town listeners, new year on the pod, and what an outstanding way to kick it off. Can't think of a better candidate for the inaugural episode here in 2020 than the one and only Mario Hilario. By the way, it's Bill Bartholomew here with you for another year of podcast action. A busy year. Got a whole lot planned for you. New episodes every Tuesday and Friday. Subscribe wherever you like to listen to podcasts or head over to ripodcast.com. And much more than just those two episodes a week coming your way as the year progresses. I won't roll out all the details now, but stand by. Live events, YouTube action, and of course, Instagram at Bartholomew Town Podcast. You can also follow me on Twitter at Bill Bartholomew. All right, enough about me. Let's now turn our attention to a Rhode Island legend, Mario Hilario. All right, so we are here with the great Mario Hilario.
Gee, thank you very much.
Again.
I appreciate it.
And we are on the way up. We were talking about kind of your adjusting to the 5 day a week morning schedule. What's that been like for you? Have you finally started to click into gear?
I've started to click into gear, yes. I did it on the weekends for over 20 years, so I had a little bit of a taste of it, but definitely Monday through Friday, that was an adjustment. It's all about trying to balance getting to bed early, but not too early. Right. I've had some mishaps along the way. You know, I say, all right, I'm tired, I'm going to get into bed. But if I go to bed too early, then I tend to wake up a little bit later. Then I'm tossing and turning until the alarm goes off. So that's not good. So sometimes it's better to go to bed a little bit later and just get a solid X number of hours, as long as it's solid sleep and you're not tossing and turning, and I feel a little more refreshed in the morning. So yeah, definitely a balancing act. And then I'm still trying to have a life and still get out in the community and do things. So,
That's what I was going to say, because that's the other thing, your work off camera, but also, you know, your life off camera, which informs your personality, which informs your work on camera. So it's this big, you know, you can't just be, you know, going to bed at 6 o'clock in the evening and expecting to be Mario Hilario, I guess, right?
I guess not. It's nice. A lot of community organizations and groups ask me to get involved in their events. And before, on my old schedule, I had days off during the week. So if I had a weeknight event, it was easy to do. Mm-hmm. Now it's a little bit tougher, but everyone's usually pretty accommodating, and they know I got to get to bed early, so they're good about getting me out on time. But yeah, I just did a toy drive for AIDS Care Ocean State not too long ago, and I love doing the roadie foodie events.
Of course, yeah.
Of course. Someone says, do you want to go to an event called Taste of Rhode Island? You had me at Taste, so yes, of course. So I try to do as much as I can without spreading myself too thin.
Let's go through your career, because there's a great piece of footage on YouTube of you, like one of your first, you know, promo reads or something like that, and you've got the full head of hair. Not that you've lost hair, but it's, you know, the less styled hair, we'll say.
I look back at those and I think, God, did I even like own a comb or a brush? Like, I just went on TV, my hair kind of wild all over the place, and apparently the news managers at the time didn't say anything about it. But so I believe it or not, if you really want to go way back, so back in, my father was a physician, and when I was in high school, I thought, well, that's a noble profession, and I grew up, you know, watching him take care of people, and I thought, I'm going to be a doctor as well. So that was kind of my mindset. And then I was in, I don't know if it was my junior or senior year of high school, and I took this honors physiology class, and I had to dissect a cat, a dead cat. Mm-hmm. And I could not even get through.
You and me both.
I was gagging. I was so I said, if I can't handle this, I'm never going to be able to handle med school. With real bodies and blood and this and that. So I said, you know what? I think I'm going to shift. I always had an interest in communications. I love to write, you know, and, you know, my generation, TV was always a big part of my childhood growing up. So I knew I wanted to do something in communications, but I didn't know what. So I ended up going to Emerson College. A couple of my friends from high school were going there as well. So I applied and I got in. And the first couple of semesters, I was just doing general mass communication classes. And one of my friends, they had auditions, I guess you call them, for the local TV news team. And it was just something that was on campus. Like, it didn't go out anywhere.
Right, like the Emerson News Network.
Exactly.
Right.
So I walked in, and they had the tryouts, and they handed you these newspaper articles, and they said, "All right, turn this article into a 20-second, news story." And I'm like, "Oh God!" So I almost got up and walked out and said, "I don't know if I can do this." But something said, "No, just stay." So I stayed. I did whatever. I read the things on camera, and then lo and behold, I look and I see that I got picked for the news team as, believe it or not, a weather person, a meteorologist. So my first ever, which is in college, TV gig was doing weather. So what they would do back then is they would record off one of the Boston stations, like their weather forecast, and then use the weather maps. And we had our own green screen, and they would just put that behind you, and you would have to kind of just like do your own thing and blah, blah. And I had no idea what I was doing, but it worked. I ended up really enjoying it. And then the next semester, I ended up getting a reporter position where I actually was going out and doing more writing and things. And then an anchor position. I fell in love with it. And what I really liked about it, I remember initially, and I still love about it, is writing stories matching your words to the video, because it's just so powerful. As you know, writing something is great, but having the visual aspect of it too, and marrying them together, and so then it was, as they say, history from there. But
What was it? What was your first job at? At 10?
My first job? No, my first job was, I actually, before I even graduated. So when I was at Emerson, I did reporting, anchoring, writing. I also did some directing, which is kind of a separate side of the business. You're that's the technical aspect of it, where you're directing newscasts and doing things. So one of my professors, she had a connection with what was Channel 56 in Boston, which they've since gone
WB
on.
At the time, or something like that. Yeah, WB 56. Yeah.
Yep. And they needed a part-time director. And I had experience doing it. So even before I graduated, they came in, I did some training and stuff, and I started directing a weekend sports program.
Nice.
Yeah, I know. And I learned how to create graphics on their computer system, and it was fun. I enjoyed it. Yeah. But my passion was to be, on air and doing reporting and anchoring and all that. So from there, my first job was actually a cable station in Brockton, Massachusetts. It was a daily live newscast, and it went out to Brockton and then like 9 or 10 surrounding communities.
Wow, hyper local.
Yeah. Very local, which was good though, cause you get to know people in the community and you really get to make connections, and it was good experience too. Like, I didn't have to move. A lot of times in this business, people have to go out far away from where they grew up or where they want to be, because you have to go to a smaller market to get your experience. Well, this was getting that small market experience, but here in New England and close to home and with good news stories. I mean, Brockton's right in between, Boston, Providence. So we had a lot of good, and there was good local politics.
Sure.
There was a lot of good stuff going on, So I was able to get a tape together. Back then, we actually used videotape.
Right.
I was actually at a conference in Boston. It was the regional RTNDA. But anyway, the news director from Channel 6, ABC 6, which at the time was probably CBS, so I'm dating myself. But anyway.
Yeah, no, they did the big switch over there.
That was
Price is Right, new home.
Yeah, exactly. That was a big deal to try to follow that, right? But the news director saw, I was in a tape critique session, and he was one of the people. And he gave me his card. He said, I like the way you wrote that. And he liked the edit. I remember specifically he said, I liked your use of the natural sound. of putting, I forget what the, it was something about, I think ironically it was a weather story, mm-hmm. But using like the sound of the rain, you know, in the piece and weaving it in and out. And
the audio, creating the audio, an audio, yes, that exactly. Planned audio, video, and narrative.
Yep, yeah. Exactly. So he liked it. So I started freelancing at ABC6. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of sporadic. It was, they'd call me when they needed me, and it was pretty much only on the weekends.
Yeah.
And then an opening came up at Channel 10, so I jumped at it. Yeah.
And that was that. The rest is history.
The rest is history. Yeah. Within a year, I was a freelancer for a while, but pretty much working almost full time. And then within like a year plus, I signed a contract, and then the Weekend Morning News opened up, and they put me in there. And yes.
The rest is definitely still playing itself out.
It's still playing itself out. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's interesting because if you talk to anyone in this business, to stay on a weekend morning shift for even a few, you know, 5 years is probably a lot for most people because they just want to get off weekends. They want to move on. But I don't know. I enjoyed the newscast. I loved working at Channel 10. I enjoyed the newscast. I kind of was able to make it my own. You know, started getting a following, and people started saying, "Oh, we love watching you on the weekends," because we were doing some, you know, fun different things.
Yeah,
we have the adopt a pet segment, then we get the chef segment going. So it was fun. So I enjoyed it, and I stuck around. You know, didn't want to leave the area, and finally, after 22 years, the next opening,
Coletta departs, and you're in. Yeah,
yeah. It was like the parting of the Red Sea. I think it was that dramatic, I think.
It really was, yeah.
I mean, when you think about it, talk about a seismic shift in the, I mean, he was such a, he is, he's an icon.
Definitely,
at the station and in this market. So when he, it was a little daunting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought about it. And I always thought, first of all, I never assumed that they would ask me to do it.
Really?
If he stepped aside, I mean, I hoped they would.
I figured if there was like a power ranking type thing, you know, someone was that obsessed with keeping track of the media, you'd think you'd be number one.
Yeah, well, it was nice that they did, but I always just said, you know what, I'm not going to think about it. If and when he decides he wants to step aside, if the decision's made for me, then that'll be it. So,
yeah, definitely. And I remember that when they retired the old set. You know, the Coletta walking off onto the new set.
Yes, onto the new
set. That's a great piece of video there. And you go, okay, yeah, there's things, you know, the lightnings, you know, the ether is at play there in the way that some of the great theaters or any other spot is, no question.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the chef, Terranova. What a duo. What a lasting thing. And that's given you such a specific,
oh my gosh,
obviously the element, and now Parched Providence making t-shirts. And
that blew my mind away. That was crazy. Yeah. I never really, I mean, so this is how, well, he was doing the Johnson & Wales segments during the week, and how it came about was his daughter, Jennifer, she ended up interning with us, and then she got a job as a producer. So she was producing the Weekend Morning News for a good stretch while I was doing it. And she said, hey, you know, do you want my dad to come in? He can do segments on the weekends like he does, you know, at Johnson & Wales. We'll do them in the studio. And I was like, oh, okay. So we started coming in. Actually, we started doing it just once a month. We do like the first Sunday of the month, and we called it Sunday Brunch. And then over time, it was actually one of our directors who had just started at the time, Jay. And he started, when I would go to take the taste of the food, he zoomed, would get a close-up of my face.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize he was doing it because I was not really paying attention. I'm just doing the segment. And, you know, the and the eye rolls and the expressions. And then people started noticing, I think, because of that. Yeah. And I started getting people coming up to me and saying, oh, do you really eat all that food? Oh, you like that food? Oh, oh, do the face, do it. And so it already had kind of taken on a life of its own. And then when the t-shirts came out, I was...
Oh, long gone, yeah.
I was like, oh, my God. But the point is that Frank and I have... So we've known each other for close to 20 years now, and we've just, you know... I was good friends with his daughter. I still am with his family. I'd go there, so we're good friends, and we just have this great rapport and relationship. Then I think it comes, I think people get a kick out of it. It comes across on the air. And
yeah, I think so. There's going to be, you know, action figures of the two of you or something. That'll be the next step, you know, but it's a great segment. It really is. And that's interesting. You note the directorial creativity and, you know, just the instinct to blend that hilarity with like kind of heartwarming slash confusing. Mm-hmm. If you're turning in for like, if you're from Illinois and you know, you turn it on and you're like, wow, this is the morning news. But I feel like 10 pushed creativity in that period, you know, and that was something that was reflected in, you know, obviously RJ Heim with his alien stories or whatever it was, things like that. But Valisanti out there in the trench coat, Terracani in the helicopter, things like that. And then you doing what you were doing, it was a really specific time in television news, at least for me. I mean, obviously, I didn't watch any other markets at that time besides Boston. But it seemed like a magical thing was happening there. And it kind of gave you all a chance to build your creativity from the ground up.
Yeah, I really appreciate the fact that I think the station trusted us and knew our strengths, knows our strengths, and lets us play to those and really be creative with that. So, yeah. And I'm glad now, because now that I've come to the weekday show, we've been able to throw in some. We did a great Thanksgiving segment where we all made our favorite holiday Thanksgiving dish, and we all tasted each other's dishes on the air. And then we did the week before Christmas, a cookie swap where we all made a cookie recipe and tried them, each other's cookies on the air. So we're trying to have some fun with that too during the week.
Borrow from the successes of the, I guess, the national morning shows, like those inviting people into your kitchen, so to speak, mentality, but hyper-localizing it. The characters on Sunrise now, that's fun too. It's like, it's a new thing. It feels really fresh.
It's definitely different. It's got a different feel, even from when, because I filled in for Frank when he would be off for years. I feel like this was an opportunity just to really have a different take on the newscast. You know, obviously keep at the core of it is getting people ready for their day, you know.
Yes.
News, weather, traffic, what they need. But yeah, we've got this new team in place. So we thought, let's play to each other's strengths. Allison Bologna and I have been great friends for so long now. So I think that comes across. I hope it does. We've got Lindsay Idaluca, Christina Ernie, Megan Mooney. So I think we do have a great team. We all get along really well, and we're trying to have some fun with it while doing our jobs.
Yeah.
This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
Hey, B-Town listeners, keep an ear out, or I guess an eye out, two eyes out, as you're looking at your phone, for my recurring series on the 2020 presidential election with Brown University political science chair, Dr. Wendy Schiller. 2020 Pod will be right here on your feed on the Bartholomew Town Podcast, or you can head over to 2020pod.net, where I'll post each of those episodes. Our next episode will occur right after the Iowa caucus. Stand by, 2020 Pod, right here on the Bartholomew Town Podcast. Now back to my conversation with Mario Hilario. Let's talk about some of the work you do off camera, some of the, you know, that's a long-standing element. I know we touched on it at the front of the episode, but some of the stuff you work on that doesn't necessarily get shouted out, you know, to the masses.
Yeah, well, I try to help out as many organizations as I can. Over the years, I've definitely come back and keep doing the same events over and over again. I was a 2005 graduate of Leadership Rhode Island, mm-hmm. The Alpha 2s, the best class ever. And I've been on the board for the last 6 years, so that's been a great experience. They're doing wonderful things in the state, trying to make Rhode Island stronger and better. So I've devoted a lot of time to that organization as well. Somehow, I don't know how, but I got involved with Rhode Island Mentoring Partnership, which is now Mentor Rhode Island, with their Dancing with the Stars event. That was 2008 was the year. We were at a breakfast at the station at Channel 10, and the executive director of the organization at the time said, oh, in front of everyone, so Mario is going to compete in our next Dancing with the Stars of Mentoring event. And I looked at her and I said, I am? And I said, okay, yes, yes, yes. So I did that. And I fell in love with the whole experience. Well, mm-hmm. they're a great organization, first of all. I mean, they're they're there to help the students across the state. You know, mentoring is such an important thing for kids these days in school. So, you know, the heart of what they do is great, but the event is so much fun. And I actually kind of fell in love with the whole dancing aspect of it.
Yeah.
So a few years after I competed, they asked me to come back and said, maybe you can do like a little showcase opening number type thing. And for the last 7 or 8 years, I've been getting together with the choreographer and this group of like 20 plus people, and we do this big grand opening number. And yeah, it's really, yeah, if you Google my name or YouTube and dancing, you'll see a bunch of the different things. So, you know, that's been a lot of fun too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know what I think I'm a dancer, but I'm not. I think I'm this, but I'm not. But you know what? I'm just trying to get out there, have fun, and try to get involved with the community and try to help out as much as I can.
Right. Providence right now, Rhode Island right now, big challenges, obviously. You know, no question about it. They're not new. They're things that have always been here, especially if you're, you know, not isolated in one part of the state or the other. You can sort of feel the statewide regional challenges and how specific they are. Do you, just as a member of the Rhode Island community, so to speak, you know, or obviously a member, but a face of, in many ways, around community, what's your gut instinct on where we're heading right now overall?
I always try to be positive.
Yep.
It's not always easy. I think there are a lot of issues that we've kind of had for a long time, and we've been stuck in certain mentalities of ways of doing things. And I think if we can get the political will and the community-wide will, statewide will of trying to change, you know, instead of, well, that's always the way we've done things, and really try to embrace new, fresh, innovative ideas, I think we can do it. We're small enough, we should be able to.
Right.
But it's tough. It's very territorial.
Yes.
Everyone's got the, you know, they want to look out for what they feel is important, or their issue, or the aspect of what they're doing. So I think, you know, we've got to work together. I think we've got to try to change a lot of the mentality of what's been going on in the state, and hopefully, I am optimistic. I always try to be optimistic that we can move forward and solve a lot of these problems.
Yeah, no question. So last question, or, you know, I guess just like even just coming from me, you know, personally, you know, you're a beloved broadcaster, you know, that, and that's,
I'm rolling my eyes right now.
Yeah. But, you know, it's one of those situations where I guess, you know, in broadcasting, I think ever more and more, it seems from my purview, and it's the same in music, truly, where the idea is to create an anonymous delivery system that can be easily replaced, not get out of line, not fall out of whatever sort of expectations there are. It's more difficult than ever to be a unique figure, in my mind, in today's broad media, again, music, art, theater, whatever it may be, to really jump out. And then to reach an audience that, you know, is, you know, that you couldn't be replaced. There's no, it's not the show, it's you. How do you get there? And I'm not asking for specific steps, but how do you prepare yourself for that mentally, to get into that kind of position?
Yeah.
Because it's a lot of expectations on your shoulders when you wake up.
Yeah, it is. And there was, you know, a lot of expectations, a lot of pressure. I mean, when they first asked me to take over for Frank Coletta, I mean, I had no doubt that they, you know, they are big shoes to fill. Mm-hmm. And it was a little daunting. It was daunting. And I think it's just like you said, there's so much out there between media, social media, this, that everything can just can be a big blur, and you just blend in. And I think what I try to do is just be myself, be genuine, be authentic. I hope that comes across to people. I think it does. And then that's all I can do, and hope that the audience that is out there will continue to tune in, embrace what I'm doing, and just ride this journey with me.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
The great Mario Hilario, ladies and gentlemen. turned to 10.
Bill, thank you so much.
Real pleasure. And thank you for listening. Remember, a great way that you can support the Bartholomew Town podcast is to subscribe and give a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening right now. Until next time, I'm Bill Bartholomew. We'll talk soon.
This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
At HealthSource RI for Employers, we provide access to health insurance to more than 1,100 local businesses and nonprofits, and 96% of them renew through us every year. Maybe it's our choice of 19 different health plans, our 10 years of customizing solutions, or our one local team of dedicated experts helping employers find quality health insurance. See how our numbers stack up for you. Learn more at healthsourceri.com/employers.